Gano Swagwego. That means hello everyone. Iswatundage. You are all listening to CIUT Wadranota. You're listening to CIUT Radio 89.5 Nigantro. It is placed at the frequency of 89.5.
And we're back. It is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And I believe we are joined on the line by Rick Sterling in California. There, Rick.
Yes, I am, Phil.
Rick, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for writing an article about a topic that are very much of interest to Canadians, I can tell you, is that this is the matter of the sort of the correct picture of who this group called the White Helmets really are. And you've been following this from the beginning, this war in Syria from starting in 2011. Now it's 2018. And somewhere in the middle of it emerged this name, White Helmets. You have called it out. Vanessa Beely has called it out. The great Seymour Hersh called it out. Cy Hersh, anyway, I'm going to call it. As not what people think they are. And just the last point before I ask you a question is that Canada seems to be now at this point, why we have to talk to you, Canada's deeply invested itself with the White Helmets. Some of them have arrived here, and according to the Globe and Mail, I think I'm going to put the number at around 200, friends and family, I guess, included. Mm-hmm. But we're not told who they are, there are no names, and we're not told where they are. And it comes under the rubric, the old favorite hiding places of national security, or we have to worry about their security. But Canadians do have a right to ask, do they not? Who are the White Helmets? If you could start with that.
Well, basically, the White Helmets is a group that was set up initially by a UK military contractor named James Le Mesurier, who had a contract with the, I'm not sure if it was the UK government or another agency, whether it came directly or indirectly, but it came from the UK government. And he started training some Syrians who were recruited from northern Syria, and he trained them in some rescue activities. Behind the scenes, the big motivation for this was public relations propaganda, demonize the Assad government, and try and promote Western support for the regime change effort to overthrow the Syrian government. We know this because it wasn't just the UK. The US was very quickly in on the act, and they received a lot of support from Turkey as well. So they were in on it. All of the claims about the White Helmets, that they're unarmed, that they're neutral, they don't take a political position, these are all blatantly false. In fact, in 2015, a Washington Post op-ed was actually written by a Washington marketing company, it's almost certain, but it was under the banner of Rod Sully, a nominal leader of the White Helmets, calling for a no-fly zone in Syria, which at the time Hillary Clinton and others, basically the hawks in Washington, were pushing for what they called a no-fly zone, which was basically moving towards a full-scale NATO intervention.
Yeah, prelude to an invasion.
Like they did in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so the essence of the White Helmets is disinformation. They're not what they are purported to be, and the facts are there to see. They've actually received well over $100 million in funding. And just one other point, Phil. They got the name. They began as James Le Mesurier called them Syria Civil Defense Organization, which was a bit bizarre because there was already a Syria Civil Defense Organization that existed since the 1950s and was very well established. But Mesurier gave it that name, this construct that he created. The next year, a Brooklyn-based PR firm called the Syria Campaign, led by an Irish-American, Anna Nolan, came up with a brilliant scheme to rebrand them and give them a flashy new name, which was the White Helmets.
Yeah.
So that's where they
that's like
that
saying
name
White Hat.
From.
I mean, you can see a propagandist
exactly.
working.
Yes.
They're in the room together, and somebody said, well, so who are the white hats and who are the black hats? And they said, hey, that's an idea. Let's call them white helmets.
Right, right. It's all about image and it worked brilliantly. So they were part of big media campaigns, online petitions sponsored by Avaaz and other groups that have worked to support the foreign policy goals of the West. So the White Helmets kind of burst on the scene then in 2014 and 2015, and they've been either famous or infamous ever since.
Well, very famous, I should say a very important country has been supporting them, and each year adds new financial and publicity support, and that's Hollywood. Hollywood loves them.
Sure. Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, it's a very symbiotic relationship. So Hollywood produces, and not just Hollywood, but big marketing companies on the East Coast as well, they make a lot of money because the U.S. Pays a lot of money. A lot of the budget for the White Helmets is straight-out marketing money. Mm-hmm. So it serves a dual purpose. Like the movie called The White Helmets, which was a Netflix production, somebody paid them a lot of money to come up with this scripted so-called documentary. It won the Oscar Academy Award for as the best short documentary for 2016.
Yeah. Now that also, I think from reading your writing, Rick Sterling, that we learned that that film was not, it came under, you know, so-and-so's the director, so-and-so's the producer, so-and-so's the, none of those people were in Syria. All the filming was done by the White Helmets themselves, right?
Exactly, yeah. The filmmakers didn't set foot in Syria. They did some footage with the White Helmet recruits in Turkey, and then they received some film footage from inside Syria, but they actually didn't set foot in Syria. I think it was 2017, not 2016.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned before, Canada is deeply invested for some reason, and so now there's talk once again, and I'm really amazed, this is 2018, and this is after Seymour Hersh wrote about this, and the government of Holland says it is not going to continue any longer supporting them because of the dubiousness of their the way they handle money, and also their associations with known internationally identified and agreed upon terrorists.
Exactly.
But still, the Liberal government and Mr. Kotler, who was a former member of that government, he says he's going to nominate them for a Nobel Prize. But what do you think their chances are, by the way?
Well, they have no chance of winning now. They actually did have a chance, and the Guardian out of London actively promoted them to win the Nobel Peace Prize 2 years ago. But they don't have a chance now because the gig is up. More and more people are recognizing the reality. And by the way, Canadian journalist Eva Bartlett has played a crucial role, of course, in exposing the White Helmets and what's really going on in Syria.
She had the temerity to actually go to Syria, unlike the journalists who write from Beirut or New York.
Exactly. Yeah, the New York Times reporter reporting from Beirut, of course, about what's going on in Syria. She just phones her contacts there who tell her what they like to hear, and that's what they broadcast, whereas Eva Bartlett and some others are actually reporting on the ground, and they've done tremendous film footage coverage. And Eva, one of the great reports she did was with the family of the young boy who became quite famous when there was a photograph of him in Aleppo, is sitting in the back of what appeared to be a brand new ambulance, but the boy was looking very dazed and confused and dusty, and for whatever reason that photograph went around the world and was viral for weeks, and you had mainstream media journalists almost breaking down in tears over the sight of this boy. Well, yes. Eva went to Aleppo and found the boy and his family, and she documented that the story was a complete, the White Helmets had cooked up that whole incident. They'd basically grabbed the boy from the family, and they took the photograph and promoted it through their publicity networks, And the reality of the situation was totally different. The father was angry. He said the white helmets mostly are running around with cameras, and they're, in terms of rescues, they mostly rescue the Jabhat al-Nusra, the terrorists, mm-hmm. rather than civilians. So it's the reality is so different than the image that's portrayed.
You know, we had to maybe label these things photo bombs because Mr. Trump and previous Bush, Clinton, they all love these iconic photographs, which they then turn, and of course they do it at the United Nations, Vicky Haley, whatever. They hold
Nikki
up the
Haley,
picture.
Yep.
And they hold up the picture with the and with the phrase, you know, we're going to have to do something. I have to fire 59 right. deadly missiles into Syria because I saw a photograph of a child, a beautiful baby, I think is the way Trump put mm-hmm. it.
And yes, yeah. Yeah, it's really, it's pretty disgusting, really. And frankly, it's not pleasant to see Chrystia Freeland gloating and them bragging about the great Canadian role in rescuing the white helmets. It turns out that, and here another on-the-ground journalist actually visited the site, the headquarters of the white helmets in southern Syria, in an area that they've got some kind of a deconfliction process. So the white helmets headquarters is still there, and Vanessa Bealey interviewed the head of that operation, and he reported, well, 800 people left, only 422 of those ultimately went to Jordan. Well, what happened to the 380? Mm-hmm. Well, they stayed. They weren't white helmets, so who were they? That's one question.
Mm-hmm.
And now 117 white helmets and families. So that's how many of those are white helmets? I suppose a third or a quarter of those.
Well, I read Mr. Messier. The Globe and Mail went over the top about how exciting this all was, and it was a great Canadian coup. But along the way, they interviewed Messier himself, and he was speaking of the Canadian representative by her first name when he met in Turkey,
mm-hmm.
and he called her. He said, "Oh, Robin in this thing was terrific." And then he went on to talk about how, well, you see, if they weren't rescued, they would have all been killed. What evidence is there of any of the Syrian government killing a white helmet?
That's another. There's no evidence of that at all. In fact, on the contrary, the Syrian government is very active in reconciliation. And the fact that Vanessa Bealey went from government controlled area into this opposition controlled area, which is under this deconfliction agreement,
but very
she did that
brave,
just 2 weeks ago, and she interviewed the person. There's no threat to their life. And the Syrian government and their allies, they're only launching attacks against the armed militants who are attacking villages and civilian populations and launching attacks against the Syrian government mm-hmm. forces.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been part of the white helmets are part of the overall propaganda scheme that's promoted by the West to generate the funds and to basically win public acceptance of the government using our tax funds for these efforts at overthrowing independent governments in violation of international law.
Yes.
It's up to the Syrian government to determine their government. It's not for Canada, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, or the U.S. It's up to the Syrian people.
Well, I like the fact, actually, maybe this is a chance for also political insights on this matter of that they are reaching kind of the stages where new things are developing. Jordan is opening its borders again. Iraq is working to open its borders
mm-hmm.
With Syria. That's very incrementally, that's a big gain for Syria. And I noticed some of the Gulf-based groups are saying, well, we have to have this new constitution has to exclude President Assad. And I noticed that the Syrian position, which is well taken, is, now this is a Syrian matter. This is not, it isn't
right.
going to be the U.S., it's not going to be Russia, it's not going to be the U.N., it's going to be a Syrian constitution.
Right, right. That's correct, and I think both the Russians and Syrians that I've talked to are amenable to the idea of having an internationally supervised election, And they strongly believe that the Assad government will win very very strongly. The opposition has very little support inside Syria. It's mostly a foreign creation with exiles in Western countries who have promoted it for various reasons, and foreign governments who have had their own varying interests in destabilizing the situation in Syria for their own benefit.
Yeah, we're speaking to Rick Sterling. I really urge people to read Rick's writings on this subject, going all the way back to 2011. On this matter of Canada's calling these saying it rescued people. I like to struggle over the issue of nomenclature. If you've been giving someone money, and the Canadian government now says, yes, it gave them, the number they gave was $7.5 million. This is before the rescue business. In my view, you have to call somebody you give money to an asset. Mm-hmm. So when they pulled those people out, the 800 minus 400, those are assets. And when they say, oh, they're refugees, we want to protect them, that's not very accurate. You know them very well. You know who you gave the money to.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, many people say, well, they shouldn't bring them here. In my opinion, they ought to. It is their responsibility. If you incited somebody by giving him money to do something illegal in somebody else's country, that's mm-hmm. your responsibility. It's not
right.
the other guy.
Yeah. Well, it's a continuation, whether it's, the Vietnam War or the Contras in Nicaragua that were funded by the U.S., created by the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
A small percentage of those people who became agents of the foreign government, do manage to make their way back to the country that sponsored them. So, mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing is a bit of a continuation of that. Like, I noticed that one of the white helmets who's arriving in Canada is a journalist, actually, who was there earlier in the year, Maysoon El-Masri.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess her husband was a white helmet. They identify her as a journalist. So,
mm-hmm.
so she was a propagandist, or she was an information, a publicity person for the opposition, and I suppose she might continue that in Canada. There's lots of money for the people who spout the line that's compatible with the regime change goals of the U.S. and Canada. Canada's kind of following, following along with the U.S. In this matter, as others, unfortunately.
Special services provided.
Yeah. Right, and the sad thing is, Canada was also part of the Western governments, France and the UK, that looked the other way as their own citizens were being indoctrinated, brainwashed, and then recruited to go and fight and die and kill and die in Syria.
Yeah, that is a terrible story. And by the way, again, it's Rick Sterling, and his writing has helped us be able to make sense of all this. Rick, we really appreciate talking to you. It's very informative, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, good to be with you, Phil.
Okay, doke. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Rick Sterling. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I'll read you quickly. The Globe and Mail says that, quoting Mr. Kotler, says that they constitute, the White Helmets, the only civil defense group in Syria. And as Rick pointed out, there is a legal, internationally recognized civil defense group. So not only is it they're not the only, they're the false. There is one. And that's kind of important, Canadians. We ought to all listen up, pay attention. This has been the Taylor Report, and it is CIUT. I got to thank Jessica very, very, very much. And, we, of course, we love talking to Janice Tidwell. We'll see you next week.